This is MFG Out Loud. Courageous conversations about sales and marketing for today's manufacturers. With your hosts, Ray Zaganto and Allison DeFore.
Hey, Trailblazers. Welcome to another episode of MFG Out Loud. We are on number 24. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate your attention and respect it immensely. So we want to bring more value this week. We are talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly of channel marketing programs. Our special guest, I'm thrilled to have her, is Lorraine Ball. She's the owner of Round Peg. They are a digital marketing agency out of Indianapolis, Indiana. I would call her a Hoosier sister from another mister. She is a Hoosier by choice and a New Yorker by birth. So we have that in common. And for more than a decade, she has been hosting More Than a Few Words podcast. So she started way before podcasting was cool. So my hat's off to her. So she's a real pro. We're lucky to have you with us today. Now, what makes her a great guest and a person to talk to you about the good, the bad, and the ugly of channel marketing programs? I will tell you, her past experience inside major corporations like Carrier, Conseco, and Lennox Industries give her the knowledge and know-how really to address head-on these challenges that arise and how to use these challenges to build sales and loyalty with your distribution channel, which many people listening struggle with. Mm-hmm. So it's a privilege to have you with us. And I say, let's dive in to another courageous conversation. So let's start off by talking about, maybe you could describe for us some ideal goals and our outcomes for a successful channel marketing program.
Absolutely. Thanks first off for having me on the show. And I love talking about this both because I had an opportunity to work on the manufacturing side, and now today I work with small businesses that are on the receiving end of the programs. And I think there are a couple of things that really make a great program. The first is a program that is designed to reward your customers, to say thank you for doing business with you. The second thing is to encourage them to buy more. And those are usually the most obvious kind of programs. But there's a third category that I think is really where the payoff is. And these are the programs that are designed to help, number one, create golden handcuffs so they can't go anywhere else. And then the other side of it is the ones that are focused on your, I'm going to slip and use the word dealer a lot because most of my work is with dealers, but this applies to any distribution partner, that really strengthens their business. For many manufacturing companies, you are two steps away from your end user. And you may have only one or two channel partners in a metropolitan or area or small community. And if that channel partner goes out of business, you lose your conduit to that market. You literally disappear from that community. And so programs that, loyalty programs that strengthen the business acumen of your distribution partners, keep them healthy, keep them in business, and ready to buy more stuff from you, are incredibly valuable.
Wow. I haven't heard it put that way so succinctly, maybe ever. How about you, Ray?
I agree. It's kind of interesting. But so if to kind of summarize in my simple way of thinking, it's kind of like if you're using and depending on those intermediaries to reach your final customer, you need to do with them the same thing you're doing for the end market, is understand their business, be something that supports and augments them, basically be the most desired the most desired client of theirs. So how are you encouraging that? That's you're right. Wow. so along those lines then, Lorraine, is the, you know, back to our theme, kind of the bad and the ugly, is the bad and the ugly with examples, the absence of those good elements that you talked about, or is there more to it than that?
I think there's more to it than that. I mean, obviously, I don't think companies ever start out to create a bad program. They don't ever start out to create a program that is deceptive or confusing or hard to participate in. But all their best intentions often go awry. I think the first thing is definitely badly defined goals. If a company doesn't know up front, are we trying to reward loyalty? Are we trying to increase purchases? Do we want to create that golden handcuff? Or are we doing business development? Which of those goals does this program address? And much like any kind of marketing, one marketing program can't do everything. So you have to clearly say, this program is designed for this objective, and this program is going to help us in this area. The second thing is really, I think where they fall apart is programs that are biased towards you and not your customers. Programs that fulfill your objectives but are really burdensome or out of sync with your customers' goals. And I'll give you some examples. And again, I came out of heating and air conditioning, so some of my examples are definitely tied to that market. Seasonal programs that don't consider regional differences. Air conditioning season starts in Texas a week after it ends. It basically starts in February. But air conditioning season does not start in Indianapolis until often late June. So if you're going to run a program designed to get your customers to pre-order and early stock their inventory, and you have dates that run March to May, that's too late for the South and too early for the North. And so that's a program that great intention, but is out of sync with the market. A program maybe that's burdensome, for example, and a lot of your listeners probably have co-op advertising. Yeah. And you buy X amount, we're going to pay X amount. Well, that's great, except if I have to jump through 12 loops, send 15 copies of the ad, have everything pre-approved, and sign over the blood of my firstborn in order to get my refund, you know what? Forget it. I'm just going to run my ad. Yeah. The other thing is sometimes those programs, again, very biased towards my objective. I'm paying 50% of the ad. I want 50% of the ad space. No. From your channel partner's perspective, yes, they appreciate your help, but it's their business. And so balancing that ratio of how much is about them, how much is about you, or having a product or a service that you want to put the attention on that your customers just aren't ready to focus on. It doesn't fit their market. It doesn't fit. I apologize, we have sirens in the background.
You're being robbed.
but things like that you're trying to sell a product or a service that really they're not ready for. And so all your money and effort is focused on that and not on the place where you're trying to go. So that's a big one. The other thing that really goes wrong is execution. You're going to win a prize. You're going to get this service. You're going to have access to these tools, and the dealer or the contractor or the distributor does everything right, and then they have to wait 6 months to get whatever it is you're giving. Or what you're giving away is no longer relevant. And I'll give you my favorite example, and then we can, I'll come up for air. In the 1950s, Bryant Heating and Cooling came up with a great idea. They would reward the very top salesman nationwide with a silver tea set. Why? Because they were on the road all the time, and they could bring this silver tea set home to their wives, who would be rewarded for giving up their husband for this travel time. In the 1950s, that made a lot of sense. In 1992, there were a significant number of women in that sales force, and even the women staying at home didn't really want the tea sets anymore. They had the tea sets from their mothers or their grandmothers or both, and they were still giving away the tea sets.
Wow.
So it was losing touch with what was now relevant with the customers. So those are some examples of where programs, oh, can I have one more?
Absolutely.
Okay. This is one that was bad for the company. It was a good idea, and it was best of intentions. Company realized that about half their distribution channel was owned by people who were in the 50 and up age range, which meant that the companies were going to be going through succession transition in the next 10 years. They created this retirement fund. Instead of co-op advertising, your co-op dollars would be contributed to this retirement account. So when you sold your business or you retired, you'd have this payout. Great idea. They did not think through the regulatory issues. They did not think through the financial implications. They did not dot their I's and cross their T's on all. This was not a co-op program. When it became a retirement program, it was under a whole different level of legal scrutiny. 2 years into it, they pulled the plug. And I will tell you, 25 years later, they are still trying to clean up the mess that that program created for them.
Wow.
Wow. Well, okay, I made some notes because you made five incredibly good points. So how can manufacturers adjust and turn these things into good? So for example, you mentioned one, badly defined goals, two, programs that are out of sync with the market, three, co-op marketing that makes it hard, execution, waiting too long to actually be rewarded, and then the last example was spot on, being irrelevant. Mm-hmm. So could you share some ways with our listeners of, you know, how do we turn it around?
So step number one, a postmortem on every program that you run. You know, having sat in the corporate marketing seat for a really long time, one of the things that I noticed is that people came and went. That's life in corporate America. If you're bright, if you're talented, you're here a year, here a year, here a year, and you never have to live with the consequences of your decision. You know, so the first thing is if corporations would have a rule that it was 3 years in a job, year one, you clean up from your predecessor, year two, you make your decisions, and year three, you clean up after yourself, everything would work a lot better, but that's not how corporate America works. So having a good postmortem system that really goes through and says, this is what we did, this is the timing, this worked, this didn't, so that when the new marketing manager comes in, they have a roadmap. And that will address something that I didn't talk about, and maybe we'll talk about a little bit more at the end, but this idea of trust.
Yes.
You know, when you're putting these programs together and you're going out to your distribution channel, you're saying, trust us, this is going to be great for you. And the problem is, and I had a contractor say this to me once. I was sitting in his office and we were talking, and he said, you don't understand. Today, you work for Lennox. Tomorrow, you could work for Carrier. Tomorrow, I'm still going to be here. And tomorrow, and tomorrow, and tomorrow. And that's the difference between a corporate marketing employee who will move on and a business owner. So your distribution channel is going to have a certain amount of skepticism every time you roll out a new program. So having those postmortems, having those histories, being able to say, you know, we did this program and we're building on what we learned will help with the trust. Interesting side note, I was sitting in his office. He said to me, today you're working for Lennox, tomorrow you're working for Carrier. I actually had just accepted a job with Carrier. And he called me a week later when it was announced and he said, was it something I said?
Perhaps.
But that really does really prove that point. So the postmortem, I think, is really important. I think the other thing is ask your customers.
Yes.
Ask your customers why they buy from you. Why do they buy from your competitors? Ask them what they value. Ask them beyond just a discount on your product. What is it that they want to do in their business that they can't do? And then maybe you can find an opportunity to provide a product or a service or a resource. One of our strongest resources and tightest golden handcuffs had nothing to do with the products that we sold. I had three of the best trainers in the industry. One was an expert at P&Ls and finances and accounting, and one was a operations and productivity person, and one was on marketing. And we made these trainers available to go around the country. And you could participate in the programs, and our distribution partners could offer these classes as a way of attracting not just their customers, but their competitors' customers. They would open the classes up and say, no, you don't buy from us, no problem. Come as our guest. Sit next to our territory manager who can then explain to you how we do X or Y. And it was a wonderful customer acquisition program. Because it focused again on the needs of that end, not the consumer, but that end player in the distribution channel. And it brought real value all the way through the channel. Consider creating an advisory panel of some of your biggest, best, and most loyal customers. Post-COVID, reward them with a trip. We would do advisory council meetings in very attractive locations. And that was your reward for giving us your expertise and your perspective. We would fly you to Phoenix. We did one in Hawaii back in the day when there was a lot of extra money. But, you know, maybe South Florida, maybe somewhere up north on, you know, in the middle of the summer. Half a day of meeting, half a day of golf, half a day of meeting, half a day of hiking and horseback riding, whatever your customers would enjoy. But the reward for being your best and most loyal customer was to share your opinion and the experiences. And finally, beta test. I think there is, I always felt it, the rush to launch the program in time for the sales meeting. You have one shot. You bring everybody together for the annual meeting, and it doesn't matter whether you're ready or not. You have to launch that program on October 1st, March 1st, whatever it is. Stop. Stop doing that and launch the program when it's ready. Announce that you are rolling out a beta test. Tell people what some of your early results are. Use those sales meetings to get feedback. Instead of talking to your channel, listen to your channel when you bring them all together and then roll out a program 30 days later that reflects their input. You'll have much higher buy-in and a better quality program. Okay, those are my tips. I told you, I don't come up for air often.
Wow. Yeah, but the good thing is that we were swimming with you and completely enthralled. So
yeah, I got one.
I'm Ben Ray.
This how has how has e-commerce, the kind of the rise of e-commerce impacted how manufacturers or OEMs are engaging with their channel? Is that another wrinkle in the equation or another variable?
I definitely think that e-commerce has taken some of those day-to-day interactions out of that. My whole community must be on fire. This is another, there's another fire engine
rolling
by.
You're in a rough part of town, aren't you? The main streets of Indianapolis.
Well, you know, we are one block from a fire station, and I can count on one hand the number of times in a month that fire truck goes by. And congratulations. Okay, so back to your question on e-commerce. Yeah. I think that it has taken some of the personalization out, and I think that's a challenge because as the transactions become more point and click, it's harder to cultivate that loyalty. And I think that manufacturers and distributors have to work harder to maintain that human connection. I think you can still run loyalty and incentive programs through your online based on purchases. I still think there's tremendous interest in business development tools. I think you have opportunities to provide links to online training tools and online resources, again, through your most loyal customers. And I think there is, while there's a lot of bad, there's also a lot of good. With data and customer relationship management software and the electronic tools, you know a lot more about your customers. When I was at Lennox, we consolidated our sales team, and this was revolutionary in 1989. It's not revolutionary now, but instead of having five regional sales offices, we had one national one. But when you called in, the phone system identified your area code and funneled you to the right region. And then when somebody answered the phone and they pulled up your account, they could see not only your transactions, there was a whole personal history. So I could get on the phone with you and go, Ray, nice to talk to you. Hey, how's your son doing? I know he was going for that scholarship, that football scholarship. And you could create the illusion of intimacy even though you were much further away. And the software has definitely improved since 1998. One when we were doing it back at Lennox.
Wow, that's a great example. And we've been talking a lot about that in our Game Changers Thursday live events that we've been doing, right? And the main message has been around, you know, selling naked, marketing naked, not utilizing and leveraging the data that we have, and we use what, maybe 10% of what our CRM can do.
Yep.
10% maybe. Mm-hmm. And all the rest of that information, nobody's using it for the good, and they could. So I think that was a powerful example. I think Ray might have another burning question because we're getting close to wrap up here.
I'm getting that look.
Give it a look.
That's right. It seems as though, I mean, everything you've mentioned, it's like there are clear steps and clear things that organizations could be doing. What's the biggest barrier? I mean, it's you've articulated the problem areas and the solutions very clearly. What stands between, hey, this is what you should do, and actually doing it? What's your experience there?
Again, I'm going to say it's never, there's no evil person in corporate trying to pull one over. I think a lot of it boils down to inexperience. You get a lot of people, this is the first time they put together a program like this and they don't have a roadmap. I think that I think a lot of times you maybe don't budget enough for something. And I don't know that companies do the ROI. I think that's a huge one, is they see these programs as expenses. And they don't consider the, you know, if I run a training program and three of my competitors' customers come to the class, and it cost me $1,000 to run that training day. But each of those customers in the next year is going to buy $10,000 from me. Did I get my money's worth? Heck yeah. And then let's also talk about the contractor in the room who really didn't know how to read his P&L, and now he does, and he figures out his overhead is too high, and he changes his pricing model so that he's actually in business next year, and he's still buying product, and he's still buying from you.
Mm-hmm. And go ahead, Elsa, please.
Real quick, this is something that came out of our, again, there was just so much content yesterday with our Game Changer event. And I think this is what you're saying. Are they busy measuring activities instead of outcome?
Oh, I definitely activity versus productivity all day long. I checked off the boxes. I had the launch kit. I had the meeting. I sent out the information on to the next thing. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. As opposed to, we got X number of new customers. We got X number of increases in purchases from our existing customers. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Well, Ray, do you want to wrap us up here? We could talk about this all day. I'm so...
No kidding. No kidding. Wow, what an awesome conversation. I got to admit, I'm a channel and distribution novice, and it was so awesome to be in the presence of a master today. I learned a lot. I'm confident our listeners did as well. And what a conversation. I'm going to be re-listening to this one a few times. Yeah. and quoting you regularly on LinkedIn, because that's our place where all the cool people are hanging out, right, Allison?
Absolutely.
That's great. So listen, if you like what you heard and enjoyed the conversation today, we would love to have you come back and hang with us again. Our listeners, please tell a friend about us, like and subscribe. We're doing something like this every week, having a courageous conversation about how manufacturers can grow their businesses, and come back and spend some more time with us, because we know you're out there. We hear you. You're important to us, and we want to help you get better. So please keep manufacturing out loud, because we need you. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Lorraine.
Thank you for listening to MFG Out Loud with Ray Zaganto and Allison DeFore. You can subscribe and find show notes at mfgoutloud.com.